Hello, my name is Marlene, and I'd like to welcome you to Vegan Nation. Vegan Nation is an informational program featuring vegan music, news, events, and interviews about the vegan evolution revolution happening worldwide, manifesting freedom, peace, justice, wellness, health, and sustainability. The views in this program do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the station nor its management. Vegan Nation has been on air since 2015. Much thanks to all our listeners for tuning in. In this episode, I'm featuring former microbiologist Joanne Farb, from farmer rep to vegan activist. This feature is a short clip, an edited shortened clip from her one-hour speech at the Whole Planet Spirituality Conference in October 2023. And that conference was titled, Peace Begins With Me. And her speech is From Farmer Rep to Vegan Activist. This recording is from the Spiritual Forum. Here's Reverend Carol Saunders introducing Joanne Farb.
Joanne Farb is a former microbiologist and mother of two lifelong vegan daughters, raised vegan, born vegan, raised in the vegan Mecca of Kansas, which is right behind the vegan Mecca of Wisconsin. She's been writing and speaking about the intersection of health, environmental sustainability, and social justice for over 25 years, and she's the author of two books. Joanne's got a great story to tell.
So then I get to high school, and I was lucky enough to go to Shawnee Mission South High School, which had this incredible program there that trained high school students like me to be student naturalists and science educators for younger children that were bussed in on field trips from all around the greater Kansas City area. But the downside of this program was that we were doing some really awful things to animals. And I sort of got persuaded to adopt the mindset of the people around me. And so I was teaching, I probably taught hundreds of kids how to dissect frogs. And while these things really disturbed me, I kind of pushed that aside. I bought into this philosophy that prioritized intellectual progress over peace and compassion and justice. So then I get to college and I'm studying microbiology and I hear about this job in a lab that this one professor has one position open for doing some hands-on research, and it's a pretty autonomous role and it sounds really cool, and like everybody in my classes is wanting to get this job. Everybody's applying for it. And I get selected for the position over a lot of students that I consider much better students than myself, and probably in part because of my experience handling animals, I think. So very quickly, I'm trained to do some things. I'm gonna spare you the details, but I'm part of doing hideous things to rats. And I can see that I am traumatizing them, and I can see how terrified they are when I walk into the room. One day after things have been really, really awful that I'm doing to the rats, and it's not working well, and they're not doing what we need them to do in order to collect data, I suddenly have this epiphany, and I realize that we are stressing them so badly, and our experimental design is so terrible, that any data we collect from this is going to be absolutely meaningless. And so when I realize all this, like we're tormenting them, that's not going to happen, and we're not even going to have usable data, I go marching straight into my professor's office, who heads the lab, and I explain all this to him, and I'm thinking, this will be the end of the research. And he looks at me and he says, you're absolutely right, that we're not going to have any usable research from this. He said, but that doesn't make it useless. He said, because I am training the next generation of lab animal scientists. And furthermore, he says, I have grant money to use up, and if I don't use it, I'm not going to get as much next year, so just keep doing what you're doing. And I am happy to report I quit that job on that day, and I found another position working in a lab doing research on red peppers. So So it's some years after that. I go back to school to get certified as a science teacher, and I attend the National Science Teachers Association conference. It happened to be in Kansas City that year, and I went, and I was shocked at what I saw in the vendor exhibit area. What you've got is, you know, the wonders of biotech being taught by Big Ag and Big Pharma. They're just being basically fed industry propaganda about all of these issues that are really critical for us, our health, our well-being, the planet, democracy, justice. And so I'm starting to recognize that the more educated people are, actually often, the more bought they are. So, and you know, it's interesting how many of us as vegans recognize how dairy industry propaganda has been biasing and influencing the teaching of science and nutrition education and regulatory agencies. What most of us don't realize, though, is that same dynamic is taking place with almost every big industry.
We're listening to Joanne Farb, a snippet of her speech, from Farmer Rep to Vegan Activist. You're tuned into Vegan Nation. Let's have a little musical interlude. This is Glass Walls by Kat McKenzie.
Oh, we're standing here again, facing violence and despair. Our anger we no longer hide, because we know we have to fight to wipe away the ignorance, to shatter myths and traditions, and teach our neighbors what this is. It's torture, it's murder, it's injustice. If we could tear down those brick walls and replace them all with glass, we'd show the world what it's paying for and make them leave it in the past. And if we did the same with thoughts and listened to what's in our hearts, we'd see the day when every animal is free. Compassion in shame. We know what's right, we know what's wrong. This movement is for everyone. We all feel love, we all feel pain. We have to stop this othering. We must learn how to be responsible and stop harming the ones who don't look like us. If we could tear down those brick walls and replace them all with glass, we'd show the world what it's paying for. Make them leave it in the past. And if we did the same with thoughts and listened to what's in our hearts, we'd see the day when every animal is free. Free.
So, as I said, my student debt was adding up, and I'm getting a little uncomfortable about that. And I hear about this job. A major pharmaceutical company is offering a position, and it sounds like I actually have the credentials to get this position. So I'm really psyched up for this. I'm at my last round of interviews, and it's gone great. And then the main guy who's the decision maker says to me, "So what do you think about animal rights?" And the truth is, I didn't even know what animal rights was at that point, right? And so I'm sitting there, and he asked me this question, and I knew I'd be working with the animal-using industry in this position. And so my brain freezes, and all I can hear is this going through my brain over and over and over. What do you think about animal rights? What do you think? And I'm like, what do I answer? Because it's clear to me, if I don't answer this question right, I'm not going to get the job. And a long period of time goes on, and we're just like staring into each other's eyes, and nothing's happening. And finally, he says to me, "Never mind. You don't need to answer that question. Just answer this. Do you think that you will be able to do this job?" And I'm like, "Yes." And so I get the position. And because I know I will be working with animal testing labs, with confined animal feeding operations, and with pharmaceutical manufacturing plants. Now, I won't be doing any of these things, but I will have to be touring them, and I will have to be working with the people who do these things. First of all, I want you to know, in many ways, it was a really extraordinary job. I mean, the pay and the benefits and the opportunities and the training and the status and the company car and the vacations and the sales meetings in balmy retreats, you know, over the dead of winter. And people refer to this as the golden handcuffs. And because once you're in it, it's such an incredible set of incentives, you don't want to leave, no matter what. And so that's kind of what I was in. And it makes me now think about, you know, Upton Sinclair, the author of The Jungle, his statement. He says, it is difficult to get a man to understand something when his salary depends on his not understanding it. And as I got more into this industry, and sometimes I would see things that were very troubling to me, and I would talk with some of my peers within the company. Does this bother you? What do you think? And we'd have conversations, and I could see that they were doing things to protect themselves from seeing the bigger picture and justifying what we were being exposed to. It was my job to disseminate published science. I was part of an army of people who were getting cherry-picked science and making sure that science that supported our company's profits was being seen by more doctors and regulators and government officials and everybody than any science that might possibly contradict it. So first I had a four-state region, Kansas, Missouri, Nebraska, and Iowa. It was my job in that capacity to work with the pharmaceutical manufacturing plants and the lab animal testing facilities. And I believe I was probably inside of the majority of these facilities in the four-state region during the time I was there. So in the Midwest at this time, most of the companies were animal health companies. And don't let that word fool you. What they're really about is figuring out how to support animal agriculture. So they're trying to figure out what's going to be the next big pathogen that will cause losses to farm animals and then be the first to create a new vaccine for it. And of course, every vaccine then, not only in its development did it require animal testing, but every single batch had to be tested for safety and efficacy in more animals. Every single batch before it could be released. This is what I saw. This is what was going on in this industry. The other thing I noticed that was interesting too, when it came to the actual testing of this stuff, so there was also the pet industry making all the things for pets, and even pet food testing was going on. That's lab animal testing, all this stuff. They were completely shut down to any harm to the animals. I remember walking into a rabbit room once where they were testing a vaccine, and it wasn't a very big cage, and it had like 20 rabbits in it, and they were literally, they had to jump over each other to move in the cage. And this is where they were doing the testing of a vaccine for the farm animals. And so the rabbits were only going to be in the cage for 3 weeks, and then they were all going to be killed. And they would inject them all with the vaccine, and then it was how many of them died in the three-week period. And so you walk into the room, and the smell is so strong you can barely breathe. But one of the most powerful memories I have of all of this was the day I toured a chicken hatchery. So my touring a chicken hatchery, this is where pretty much all chickens in the United States come from. These are industrial operations, and this includes backyard chickens and school hatching project chickens and all the humane and cage-free. They all get them from commercial hatcheries. And so the commercial hatchery, I remember we had to travel down dirt roads in the middle of nowhere, Texas or Arkansas, to get there, and it's like these metal buildings. You had to go through locked fences to get to them, no signs. You'd have no idea what's in them. You get inside these enormous metal building, and then there's these little rooms inside the building that are walk-in incubators, and they have these big carts in them. And on any particular day, it's set so that on that day, these eggs, all the eggs in that one incubator hatch. They're wheeled out of the carted room and down the hall to a place where a couple of men are standing, and it's their job to take these chicks off the carts and get rid of all the unhatched eggs and the muck and the dead chicks. They throw them on a conveyor belt that takes them through this little window to another room where there's all these women around this round table with a conveyor belt, and it's their job to give the first round of vaccines to all these chicks.
We're listening to Joanne Fobb, a former microbiologist. We're listening to her speech, from farmer rep to vegan activist. This is her speech at the Whole Planet Spirituality Forum and Retreat in October 2023. Peace begins with me. You're tuned into Vegan Nation. I'm your host, Molly Narrow in Worcester, Massachusetts. We'll be taking a short break, and then we'll continue with the speech by Joanne Farb.
If we could tear down those brick walls and replace them all with glass, we'd show the world what it's paying for and make them leave it in the past. And if we did the same with thoughts and listen to what's in our hearts, show the world what it's paying for and make them leave it in the past. And on the day we see the truth, we will change the way we view the animals. Let's build glass walls. Let's build glass walls.
Welcome back from the break. Thank you very much for joining us on Vegan Nation. I'm your host, Marlene in Massachusetts. I'm featuring this speech by Joanne Farb, from farmer rep to vegan activist. This is Joanne talking about her experience while working for the pharmaceutical industry at a chicken egg hatchery.
When I come into this, I think I was into the room with the women first is what I saw. And I see these women, and there's like five or six women around the table. They've got stationary hypodermic needles at each place, and it's their job to grab the chicks as quick as they can off the belt, slam their necks into the thing, and throw them through the center of the table. They go down a chute, and they get boxed up to be sent out. And they're doing this very, very rapidly. And I see this, and my first thought is, gosh, how do you get it in the right spot? How does it, you know, do the chicks survive this? Well, no, many of them don't. They might get it in an eye or in an artery. But, you know, they're just chicks. It's not a big deal. So that's the first thing I notice. The other thing I notice is these women look so much older than I know what they must be. They cannot possibly be as old as they look because they couldn't move as fast as they're moving. And they never smile, they never talk, they never get a break. They're just sitting there with these very, very sad faces doing this work very, very fast. As I'm watching that, I look through the window and I can see the men behind the window. And they're laughing and they get backed up in their job because the women's job can't, you know, is what holds up the operation. So when the conveyor belt gets full of chicks, they've got to stop. They take a break, and they're smoking their cigarettes, and they're telling jokes. And while I'm seeing them through the window, I notice the occasional chick hopping up to the edge of the cart and then jumping over the edge and falling to the ground. Now, baby chicks aren't going to get hurt falling 4 or 5 feet to the ground. They're very light. And I keep watching, expecting to see one of the men bend down and pick the chicks up. And that doesn't happen. And I'm like, that's weird. Why aren't they getting the chicks? What's happening to the chicks? Well, then we go around the corner, and I get to see the men's room where they are. And that's when another chick hops off right in front of me. And now my eyes follow to the ground, and that's where I see there's chicks all over the floor. Some of them are running around unhurt. But then comes the next round of carts, and now I see there are half-smashed chicks stuck by their blood and guts all over the floor. They're not dead. They're flapping around, and in that moment, I start to think about things I've heard from my past, of atrocities, of humans turning a blind eye to suffering happening right in front of them to other humans. And you may, in fact, remember the case of Kitty Genovese. That was big when I was a little child, and she was attacked in New York, and she screamed for a long time, and lots of people heard her, and somehow, over a long period of time, no help arrived, and after a very long period of time, she was killed. And, you know, that shook the nation when people heard that story happened. My parents grew up in Kansas City at a time, or my father did anyway, when it was common for people of color to have to give up their seat to him, a young, healthy white male, and, you know, an older black woman, she had to give up her seat to him. And my dad, who's actually a very kind, justice-loving person, at the time, it never even crossed his brain that there was something wrong about that, because he was born into it. This is just how it was, and everybody did this. You know, every day we ignore specific injustices that our culture has taught us to not see. And every culture does this. You know, teaches its people to not see certain injustices that privilege some while harming others. And you look at the internment of Japanese Americans during World War II. And I remember asking my parents about this once I had like really understood what had happened. I was well into adulthood. And I said to my parents, I said, what was that like living through this time? Because my father actually fought in World War II. My mother was a teenager at the time. I said, what was that like for you? Did you object? Did people around you object? How did people go along with this? And you know what they said? We weren't even aware it was happening. This was happening right under our noses in this country, and lots of good people didn't even realize it was happening. So the tendency, again, is to think these things happened in our past, we've evolved, we wouldn't do this again, we wouldn't allow this again. And yet, just a couple years ago, how many of you realize they actually built quarantine camps in the United States for people who might be infected with COVID? Now, to my knowledge, they weren't used here, but they did build them. And in other countries, like Australia, they did use them. And in fact, there were people who didn't even have any symptoms of COVID, didn't even test positive, but from contact tracing were around somebody who tested positive, and they got taken against their wishes to these quarantine camps. And Canada had other really draconian things happening. And when people protested that, not only did their bank accounts get frozen, but people who tried to donate to the protesters, their bank accounts got frozen. That happened in Canada just in the last few years. And the other interesting thing, and I didn't know this before the last few years, but in fact, do you know what the very first propaganda was that the Third Reich used to influence people to otherize Jews? It was that they were spreaders of disease. That was the very beginning propaganda before the Holocaust even got going. So back to my story now. So I'm starting to think about some of these bigger issues, and I start to realize that it's my food choices that are driving the industry that I'm seeing. That's really the fuel for all of this. And, you know, I like the people I work with, I like all this stuff, but I'm starting to get uncomfortable because even though I'm not doing these things to animals, I'm part of an industry, I'm a cog in it, and I'm working to make it more successful in the world, and I know that it's doing these things. And so initially, my response to this is that I'm just gonna be a closet vegan. And so I figure out pretty quickly you can't talk about veganism, because I also figure out this. Now I'm actually starting to understand what animal rights is, but I'm learning about it from the biomedical community. So I still don't have any connection with animal rights per se, but I certainly have the view of it from the people who think it's some really evil movement. And so I'm starting to learn a little bit about it, and even the things they're saying to disparage them, I'm like, why is that bad? You know, I'm starting to think that. So no sooner do I become vegan, but a closet vegan, I'm pretending it's for health, than I find myself having to go to a prime rib buffet with some key players down south in the poultry industry. And it's my job to woo these people and make them like me. And furthermore, I've been forewarned that they did not want my company to send a female for this position. They wanted a man. And my company said they don't play that game, that they thought I was the best person for the job, so they sent me. But, you know, I'm coming home every day amidst this, though, because I'm still having to see things on a regular basis. And I'm coming home, by this time I'm married, and I'm crying a lot from the stuff I'm seeing. I can, you know, barely hold the tears back sometimes, getting out of a facility, getting in my car, and just, like, bursting into tears at what I've seen. And this is happening with some frequency, and I'm telling it all to my husband. And finally, we decide it's time for me to quit the job. And after a while, he became vegan, too. But anyway, a friend of my parents says that he heard about some guy coming to town who's a former cattle rancher that's now vegan, and he's going to be giving a talk, and I might want to go to it. And I'm scared to go to it. I'm afraid that somebody from the industry might take pictures there and they'll find out I went to this talk and I'll never be able to work in the industry again. And I'm still thinking, and I'm talking even about the bigger industry, like I'm a microbiologist. So I'm like, I'll never be able to work in my field anywhere if I'm, you know, an animal, if I'm seen as friendly to animal rights. It turns out that's Howard Lyman. And Victoria Moran lived in Kansas City at the time, and she's the one sort of hosting him at Unity Temple on the Plaza to give his speech. And somehow I get invited to the after party at Victoria's place, and Howard's staying with her, and this is the first time in my life I meet other vegans in real life. I'm starting to ask myself questions like, how can we increase compassion and empathy? How can we help everyone to be less likely to not see the normalized violence and build peace in the world? Less likely to not get it when injustice is happening to those we have been taught to ignore. And what practices, behaviors, customs increase or decrease compassion and empathy in people. So the question is, if we can live good lives without causing intentional harm to any beings who can suffer, should we do it? And the single biggest thing that we can do to have a positive impact in this world is to go vegan. And it's all about love. Thank you.
That was Joanne Fogg, speaking at the Whole Planet Spirituality Forum and Retreat in 2023. I'd like to let our listeners know that Joanne Farb will be speaking in September 20th, in Kansas at the Thrive Alive Vegan Fest. Joanne's speech at the Thrive Alive Vegan Fest will be, quote, "Getting older, getting smarter, health choices that matter." I'd like to inform our listeners of another upcoming vegan event. It is in Missouri, also close by to Kansas City, and it is the Homo Ahimsa Rising Whole Planet Spirituality Forum and Retreat, October 16th through 19th, 2025. Thanks to Reverend Carol Saunders and for her recording that I shared from Joanne Farb's speech that occurred in the previous forum. Much thanks to our listeners for tuning into Vegan Nation. I'm your host, Molly Narrow in Worcester, Massachusetts. Please join us again next week at the same time. You can hear this program again at vegansradio.com. Let's go out with Annette Rudot in Germany with her song, Go Vegan. This is Molly in Massachusetts, wishing you a beautiful, pleasant, lovely day. Peace to all beings.
For too long you haven't noticed all the cruelties that have been done. But now the time has come that you listen and watch and then act. Please listen and watch and then act. Hörst du sie schreien?
Go vegan, go vegan.
Hit home this idea of how we are all more vulnerable to going along with things that harm others or contribute to systemic injustices than we realize.
Do you hear them scream?
Go vegan, go vegan.
Do you hear them cry?